Oh.
Good.
There we go. How's that? We're ready to start.
Good.
Super.
So, welcome to the December Storytelling and Organization meeting. We are recording, and this month we are doing a story swap. And we have a few folks that are going to be telling. So we'll go ahead and get started right now. Cora, would you lead us off?
Okay. Looking at gratitude, which was one of the topics that we encourage people to tell stories about, and looking at gratitude in organizations, I thought about a time when I was facilitating team building, and it was when I was a management and organizational developer with a Data Journal Corporation. And one of the most fun things I did was team building in my job there. I worked in a manufacturing plant. And so it was always a fun thing to do, to build teams in the different departments. And then one day the corporation was introducing a new product, a new innovative, never-before-done-before product. And my assignment was to build communication between the line workers or the assembly workers, the people who put together all the computer parts, who sat pretty much at a workstation all day long soldering parts of a computer onto the motherboard or whatever. And my assignment was to build communication between those line workers or those assembly workers with the engineers who had designed that product. And it was myself and another facilitator. And, the one thing that pretty much was known about engineers, lovingly, we would lovingly talk about the fact that they were very much tunnel vision because of their field of work. And the assembly workers were very much people who weren't very much into organizational kinds of activities, and they weren't too much into doing small group activities, and they pretty much just like to sit there and do their production work because that's what they were there for and that's what they really love to do. And so the facilitator and I had some moments of thinking about, okay, so we're going to, because this was a 3-day off-site workshop for team building between these two groups of people. And so we worked pretty hard to try to build a successful event, and at times not knowing exactly, as you probably know when you put together workshops or facilitate events with corporations, and you have a successful event plan, but you're never really sure exactly what's going to happen day to day. So the first 2 days, we facilitated, those tried and true kinds of getting to know each other, team building experiences within each group, and sometimes between groups, getting them to know each other, who they were, know about what their importance is, both groups to the corporation. And the most amazing event, and the one that I thought of when I was thinking of the story to share today, was on the final day. And what we did is we created groups that were totally mixed with equal amounts of assembly workers, the line workers, and the engineers, as close as we could anyway. And we had, I don't know if I remember, 5 or 6 groups that we developed and put them into small groups. And their assignment was to create a song about this new product and how it was going to relate to the company and how what it was going to do. It wasn't like necessarily an advertisement. They weren't doing marketing. It was just they're pretty much totally open, just create a song. Get together and within your group, create a song that you're going to be able to sing to this group at the end of the day. And so, we just kind of held our breath and went, okay, guys, go and make songs. And when the day came to an end, they all had songs. It was just amazing. I mean, they were like, enjoyed it. They worked together. They gave and take. And it was just amazing. And so then they had to get up and sing their songs to the group, and everyone did. And then the next step was at the end of this day, this final day of the 3-day workshop, we were going to have a banquet. And the CEO of the plant was going to be there, and all the officers, including some of the officers from the main you know, the main office people, you know, those people. We're going to come to this banquet for a celebration, and we require those people to get up and sing their songs in front of these people. Now, these are the engineers and the line workers who, until this time, had never really worked together, rarely even saw each other, may have passed in coming and going into the plant entrance, but really didn't know each other. And we were asking them to get up in front of their bosses and sing a song. And they did, and it was just amazing. I mean, to this day, I just remember how thrilled everybody was. And when we come to gratitude, it was like, why you ask about gratitude? Well, it was throughout the program, the people, the assembly workers and the engineers constantly told us how amazing it was to be able to get out of the plant and get to know each other and find out how similar the people were, as we all are. And also the CEO, the gratitude of him, he loved it. He loved the songs. He just thought that was the most creative thing he'd ever seen in his whole life, was having his engineers and his assembly workers singing songs to him about Data General and about this new product. And everyone there just was, you know, it was just a real thankful experience. It was an experience where we had really just one of those, wow, we did what we wanted to do, and it worked, and it was great. And so there's my gratitude story for today.
Thank you. Thank you, Cora. I appreciate that. It's great to remember how people can collaborate and work together and how that really can have an impact on an organization.
Yes. Even singing songs.
I could picture it.
Yeah. Trish.
Okay. So I would say I was probably in the fourth grade, and I had to write a book report. And I really liked school, and I particularly liked English and reading and writing and, you know, coming up with ideas and things like that. But this was a book report assignment, and you really had to do it a particular way and follow the structure. So I plugged away at it, and then at one point I wanted someone to listen to it. So just that afternoon, on a Friday afternoon, it seemed like everyone was out of the house, my brothers, my sister, and my dad, and my mom was, you know, always buzzing around doing something with a family. And I said, would you listen to my book report? And she said, okay. And she sat down. And that wasn't a usual occurrence because, you know, in those days here, women were doing so many different things. And she sat down in a chair, and I can remember to this day, she sat there, and I stood in front of her, and I read my book report. And I read it from top to bottom. And at the end, I said, I just looked at her, and I said, well, what do you think? And she looked right at me and said, with a great deal of pride, I think that is very, very good.
Aww.
And I just felt great. I just felt great. And I thought, okay, good. So, you know, I put it away, kind of forgot about it, went in and did the book report. I don't really remember doing the book report at school. I don't remember the grade that I got on it. But what I do remember is that maybe a couple of years later, when I was still in grammar school, I learned more about my mom's background. She emigrated from Ireland at age 17. She had very little formal education, very smart, very little formal education. And I realized that she hadn't understood really anything I said. She had never had a book report. She didn't read books. She read the paper. But the gift she gave me was one of confidence. So she knew it was important to me. The content didn't matter. And she was able to encourage me. And I absolutely believed it. I still do. And that was my feeling of gratitude to her for giving me that gift. And I think about that sometimes in the world of business, that you just never know when someone might just give you that push or that pat on the back or that you can do it kind of thing. And maybe we should think a little bit about them sometimes and be grateful for whoever those people were in our lives. And that's
awesome.
That's beautiful.
Yeah.
Excellent. It's amazing what positive comments can do for your psychic.
Yeah. Yeah.
No matter where
true?
You are, who you are, how old you are,
yeah.
or how young you are.
Right. Yeah, I had forgotten
how
I told it in a workshop recently. I'm sorry.
I think it was Maya Angelou that said people won't remember what you said, but how you made them
feel,
right?
Absolutely.
Exactly.
Yeah, that was
exactly
what I was thinking about, too.
Yes.
And it's your, you know, audience as well. They give you confidence to take a risk that you wouldn't have.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Trish. Pete.
Thank you.
Yeah. Oh, gosh. It's 1975, and I'm a recent employee of the U.S. Forest Service. I'm pretty full of confidence with a new degree in wildlife biology and full of the arrogance of youth. I've been there for about a year, and I'm going to an office meeting, what they call a family meeting. At the end of the meeting, the forest supervisor, who I work for, stands up in front of everybody and asks, "Is there anybody here that doesn't feel like they're a member of the Forest Service family?" So I look around. Nobody raises a hand, but I do. And he says, "Pete, don't you feel like you're a member of the Forest Service family?" "Oh, well, no. No, my family is 200 miles away, mother, sister, aunts, and uncles." And after the meeting, a couple people put their arm around my shoulder. "Oh, Pete, you don't feel like you're a member of the family?" "No, you know, that's life. I'm alone here." So it's 1990, and I'm sitting in my office in Walker, Minnesota, when I get a phone call, and it's the owner of a local boat shop. And "Pete, this is Bill down at the boat shop. DJ Johnson's had an accident. We called the ambulance, but we need help with DJ's son. Can you come and pick him up and take him to your office till his mother gets there?" "Oh, okay, I do that. I go to the boat shop. I pick up DJ's son. He doesn't know what's going on. He's so young. DJ had been working in the bottom of his boat when he was overcome by fumes. Well, I drive by the clinic on the way to the office. I see the ambulance is still there. I take that small boy upstairs to my office. I show him the computer, turn it on, and have him typing away. And then I get the word that DJ has died. His wife, Nancy, who also works for the Forest Service, arrives at the office with her daughter, and they head up the stairs with their minister. They go into my office and pull the door closed, and Nancy's daddy's an angel now. So I feel helpless. At DJ's memorial service, the church is filled with DJ and Nancy's friends and colleagues, and the minister gives a sermon, and he asks the question, who here is willing to do whatever it takes to help this family through this difficult time? And as one, that entire congregation stands up. And I think that if it is me that passed away, that they might have done the same thing. In 2005, and I'm in Anchorage meeting with the Army Corps of Engineers. The meeting lasts all day, and I get to the airport at the end of the day. My BlackBerry phone rings. It's a new thing for me. It's my first supervisor, Forrest Cole. He's, "Forrest, what can I do for you?" "I don't know if you've heard this yet, but Leon Stuck died today." Leon Stuck died today. He and his partner were working on a mountain radio repeater. They got stranded on top of the mountain. They had to walk down. Leon fell. He went over a cliff 200 feet high. "And I'm going to see the Stuck family tomorrow morning. You need to be there with me." Well, I didn't know Leon well. I didn't know his family well, other than the fact that his wife had called him the human jungle gym, because sometimes at the end of the day, family would meet him at the office. He'd drag his kids across the parking lot, one little girl hanging on one leg, another little girl hanging on the other, third hanging on with her arms wrapped around his neck. Well, Forrest and I meet the next morning, and we go over to the Stuck residence. I get a teary hug from Susan, Leon's widow. Leon's girls are standing behind their mother, and Forrest tells Susan, "If you need anything, Pete's the guy you need to talk to. Whatever you need, you call him." Over the next week, I try to do my regular job and support the family as well, putting in a full day at the office and several hours with the family. People who work for me want to do so much, and so they do that. They set up a benefit dinner for the family. They set up a bank account for the family where you can put donations. They set up an auction to raise money. Everybody is working so hard, and over the course of a week, we raised $7,000 for that family. I bid on a peach pie at the auction and bid it up, but when I hit $100, I stopped bidding. I sold for $400. I know that if it had been me, they would have done the same thing. So in 2000 and 9, I'm thinking about retirement. I talked to Kathy, my wife, about it. And she says, I have a hard time picturing you as anything but the Juneau District Ranger. And I think that has been with me for 35 years, a wildlife biologist and a ranger. And what will I be when I leave that behind? But I make plans, and I finally make the decision. I retire. My last day on the job, I linger. Everybody's gone home. I walk around the office for one last time. When I leave the office, the door locks behind me. I've turned in my keys. I'll never be able to go back inside without an invitation. At my retirement party, there are lots of speeches and humorous and thoughtful gifts. And in the end, it's my turn. I stand up to give a farewell speech. I had a story for every occasion, but not this time. And then I recount that time in 1975 when I was a young employee, and the forest supervisor asked, is there anybody here that doesn't feel like they're part of the Forest Service family? And I was the only one to raise my hand. Well, when Leon Stuck passed away, his coworkers and colleagues and his friends raised $7,000 in 1 week for that family that was in terrible need. And I know that if it had been me that had passed away, my family would have been taken care of in the same way. I worked for the Forest Service for 36 years, and then that ended. And yet today, I know that I am still a member of that Forest Service family. And I told them to take care of yourselves, take care of your families, take care of your communities, and take care of the forest. And thank you so much for your friendship. The end.
Oh, wow. No.
Thank you.
Beautiful.
Okay. Awesome. Family happens in many ways.
Yeah. It sure does. It took a long time to learn that.
Well, see, it sounds like you've gained that wisdom. Awesome.
That is part of my solo performance that I'm working on.
Hmm. Oh, nice. Wonderful.
Well done. Thank you, Pete.
Well, thank you for the opportunity.
Jules, did you...
I got inspired, and I'm going to just share a little bit about the power of a story, about something that happened yesterday. Now I'm a mess, so thank you very much for making me for this. So I'm trying to like get myself collected. I witnessed something very special yesterday. I have a young coaching client. He's in his early mid-20s, and I met him through Toastmasters, and I've been coaching him on his career. So that's just a sidebar. So that's not the beginning of the story. So after many, many months, I attended the meeting that we're both members at to be able to, you know, get a sighting of these folks. I've been busy, all that good stuff. What I want to share, though, is this young man who couldn't hard time focusing and having attention and speaking in front of the group, gave this compelling speech yesterday about gratitude and the holidays and what it meant. And he started off talking about how he gets so excited at this time of the year that he and his wife decorate the house, and they really try to instill on the young nieces and nephews the traditions of their family and what they've done over the years. And he went on to share something that has kept him inspired, and it's a bit of history that you all might know already. It's the story about the soldiers during World War I, when both sides, both the German side and the British side, started to serenade each other during a ceasefire. The Germans started singing Holy Night in German, and the British responded, and they came across the lines and hung out together during the ceasefire, and then promptly all got in trouble when the British authorities and the German authorities got wind of this collaboration. So he's told it in a very touching way, but during it, I started to get very emotional, because during that thing, I thought, here's groups that were at war, but they had common songs and common themes that they could relate to, and they started to come together and realize that maybe they didn't need to fight, but unfortunately the authorities. And it made me think about nowadays with ISIS and people who are adhering to very different callings, and what's going to be our song that's going to help bring us together, and what's going to be the thing that's going to help us come across the lines and maybe make peace. So that's what I was thinking about when I was sitting in that meeting, and then was grateful to this young man to get up, to be brave, but that was the message I got. What's going to be the story that's going to make the difference?
Yeah.
Excellent. Really, we need it.
Jules, wonderful.
Great comment. Around this time of year, right?
Yeah. Oh. So thank you for sharing, guys. It's always the little things about that extra conversation or that extra bit of something that helps people turn around their perspective. Like the first story about singing and getting people to sing, and then doing sometimes what seems like the most absurd, crazy, oh my God, what is this going to do with my career job thing, and it ends up being the sanest thing you can do. And the thing that like melts somebody or just changes their thought process that always just amazes me. So thank you.
Isn't it interesting how story seems to be the glue or the bridge that brings groups or individuals or families together? It's the thing they share. It's the thing that they own. And it's the thing that they pass on. Interesting.
Yes.
So,
absolutely. And even if you don't remember the words, all the words, it's the feeling that you remember also.
That's right. There's science behind the impact of story. And I think we've talked about this before and how just the words, once upon a time, spoken to an audience causes immeasurable ways, people's blood pressure to go down and their stress to go down because they see story as a way to communicate. I think we talked about that a couple of, maybe 2 years ago at the conference, and the impact of story on individuals. Well, that being said, were there any other stories?
This is Dave Brower. Sorry I got on late here, but I've been listening to what's going on. Merry Christmas to everybody.
Merry Christmas. Holidays. Hi, Dave.
Hey, Dave, this is Pete. Have you got the salmon yet?
Not yet, and I'm waiting for that moose sausage, but not today yet.
I'm glad you're home.
But I thought I'd share you just a quick story, because on my business cards it always says PG, which is professional grandfather. And I have a 5- and 8-year-old grandsons that we see every day, so... I learned so much from them, both in life and away in storytelling. But I'll tell you, real kind of two quick ones dealing with Christmas, dealing with the 5-year-old grandson. And they have to bear with me because they go to a very nice school, but they don't bother to read Tennyson to them or Burns or Keats and everything. So during the summertime especially, we spend time with classic stuff. But they had their Christmas festival at the Christian Academy is where he goes, and after the kindergartner, the 5-year-old, finished his portion, they came down into the audience and sat with their parents or grandparents. And so Christian sits next to my wife. And we're listening now to the older boy that's up there and doing his thing. And Christian looks at his grandmother, and she has nylons on. And normally my wife doesn't wear nylons. And so he puts his hand on it and says, "Ooh, what's this?" She explains nylons, and so his hand slowly runs up her leg a little bit, and he goes, "Well, where do they end?" My wife says, "Well, at my underwear." He goes, "Oh, that would be very inappropriate." The other one I liked even better is that I'm German, and my father had a booming voice, and there's very little that we didn't have a lot in common, long stories. I didn't live at home a lot when I was young, but... I was playing Christmas songs for them on YouTube, a wonderful vehicle to play older Christmas songs, not just the normal ones we hear. And I had finished playing Grandma Got Run Over by Reindeer, so my wife could hear that part at least. And then we got into Old Tannenbaum. And I, all of a sudden, you know how you have these mental flashbacks. Man, I was 5 or 6 years old listening to my father just sing Old Tannenbaum, as deep a bass voice as you could imagine. And I explained that to my grandson, and he kind of understood it. He loves music, so he liked the tune that it was with. But the next day when he was with his father and mother, and he was singing songs with them, and he was singing Old Tan My Bum and holding his ass cheek. And my son has no idea about what is Old Tan My Bum all about. So, just two
poetic
nice little Christmas.
And he said my grandfather taught it to me.
Yeah, well, I get accused of that.
That well-known German tune, Oh Tan My Bum.
Oh Tan My Bum.
One of my favorites, too.
Well, Dave, ending with a laugh like that is totally appropriate to kick off the rest of the year here and end on a high note. I appreciate you sharing your professional grandpa stories.
You're welcome.
Oh, my gosh. And we could talk many times, we could share many examples of how we've misinterpreted lyrics of songs, right? So maybe that'll be a whole other storytelling opportunity.
They are out there, aren't they?
They are, aren't they? That like just like that darn autocorrect, right? Comes up with words you never intended. Well, let me go ahead and do this first. I'm going to go ahead and end our recording, and then I'll be right back with everybody. Hold on.
Okay.
Just a minute, please.
And this is Tricia. I'm going to do a quick check-in. The people on the call, Pete, Mark, Tricia, Cora, Jules, and Dave. Did I miss anybody?